You're listening to The Zen Courses Show, episode 13. Ah, lucky 13. Or unlucky, you know, depending upon how you see it. Hey, no judgment. Welcome to The Zen Courses Show, the show for online course creators who care about building actionable, meaningful, and profitable online courses. If you're a solo entrepreneur, tech geek, or creative, The Zen Courses Show is the place to get expert advice for creating your online course, overcoming overwhelm, and growing a balanced business. To get the full experience, sign up at zencourses.co, where you'll get access to free lessons, resources, and more. Again, that's zencourses.co. Hey, it's Janelle. Listen, before we jump into this episode, I wanted to take a minute and just to kind of give you a primer on this one because it is a little bit different, and I think it's different in a good way. At least I hope so. So this interview is with Brendan Hufford. Brendan does a lot of things, to put it lightly. In addition to having a full-time job, he sells jiu-jitsu equipment, and he has a blog, and he has a podcast, and other responsibilities that we'll get into during the interview. So we recorded this episode at night, and we had a great time. It honestly was a very organic conversation, more so than an interview. And in this conversation, Brendan shares his perspective on entrepreneurship and talks about why he's chosen to take the sidepreneur route and how he's managed to do that successfully. And of course, we do talk about his courses as well. But the main takeaway is you don't have to do it the way that everyone tells you to. All right, let's get into it. What's up, everyone? Thanks for tuning in. Today, I am super stoked to chat with fellow Fizzler, Brendan Hufford, founder of HustleHeart.co. Brendan is a dad, husband, and entrepreneur who also works a full-time job. Recently, he released a productivity course, which we are here to talk about, as well as how he manages to do everything he does without losing it. Brendan, welcome to the Zen Courses Show.
Thanks so much, Janelle. I'm really excited to chat today.
Yeah, I am excited to chat with you as well. So can you tell us a bit more about yourself and the work you do?
Sure. So I went to college like everybody does, right? And I was 18 years old and I was sitting in the, like, I don't even know, like the commons area. And they were like, pick a major. And I'm like, well, everybody tells me I'm good at school, so I'll be a teacher. Right. And so I became a teacher. Like I think it's so wild that I can trace like my entire life to this moment of me sitting at a table looking at a course catalog, a big blue Ithaca College course catalog. So I ended up becoming a teacher and I love teaching and I teach high school and I've loved it ever since I started doing it. The one thing that I got really frustrated with at one point was just the bureaucracy of it. The business of teaching was really, really frustrating. And I kind of delved a little bit deeper into one of my other passions, which is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I started a website and I ended up discovering Pat Flynn. And I noticed that a lot of people were making money off these things called affiliate links. And I emailed a company and a company was like, hey, we'll send you these free things if you write about them. And I was like, oh, okay, so that's a thing. People will send you free stuff if you write about it on your blog. So I did that for a little bit. Put affiliate links on a blog, ended up starting my own gi review website, started my own jiu-jitsu gi company, grew that pretty significantly, and that's doing exceptionally well. And then I kind of started wanting to really grow my business and focus more on the business side than the jiu-jitsu. You know, I'd read business books and then I would watch jiu-jitsu videos, and I found myself really gravitating a lot more towards the business side of things. And I really fell in love with it. And not too long ago, you know, less than 6 months ago, I decided to start sharing what I've learned building my business on the side, kind of like what you mentioned earlier, just without totally wrecking my entire family life. And
that's
still working full time.
Right, right. So, and just as a sidebar for those who aren't in the know, because when I first stumbled upon you, what the heck is a gi? Gi, am I even
right.
saying that?
No,
right?
No, 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 you are, right? We use this, it's so funny, like whenever you're in something, you use kind of that verbiage and nobody else knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So my jiu-jitsu company is kind of a lifestyle brand. We make all of the different things you would have associated with Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Primarily, that means the uniform, the martial arts uniform. A jiu-jitsu gi is very similar to a judo gi in that it's a grappling-based martial art. So it has to be incredibly durable, but also very lightweight and breathable and all of those things you would want out of any sort of athletic apparel. That means that the manufacturing of them, the cut and styling of them are incredibly important, as opposed to, say, like a karate gi, where the quality and durability doesn't really matter as much.
Okay, got it. I feel well informed now, or at least a little bit more than I was before.
Okay.
So, and you're just, we're talking in the evening. You're just getting home from work, right?
I am. I got home from work not too long ago. This is my ninth year in education. I taught for, God, like 6 years, and then I was an assistant principal for 2. And it turns out I'm a lot better teacher than I am a manager of people. And I decided to move to a different school, and I'm now back teaching and much, much happier.
Cool. All right. So let's have some fun and help people get to know you a bit. I've got 5 quick questions for you. Are you ready?
I can't promise the answers will be quick, but yeah, let's do it.
No worries. Okay. Question number 1, early bird or night owl?
Oh, early bird. I get up at 3 a.m. every day.
Wow. That's dedication. Okay.
It's the best time. It's the best time to work. It's when I'm fresh. I had to make myself that. I was not always, I was a big night owl. And then I had, my son's 2.5 now, but we had him and it just became impossible to do anything at the end of the day. So I just get up early.
That seems to be a common theme for parents who are trying to do their thing on the side. You have to do it. There's no other option but to get up early.
Absolutely.
Cool. So question number 2, what is one thing that you do each and every morning to start your day off right?
I make coffee. I love coffee. That's why my podcast is called Entrepreneurs and Coffee. I'm drinking coffee right now. And
what kind of coffee are you drinking?
It's so bad. I wish that I had like something. Look, Janelle.
Look, you can't have a podcast called Entrepreneurs and Coffee and drink shitty coffee.
I drink it's so bad. So look, I bounce between like my buddy. So here's the 3 coffees I've had most recently. My buddy Dave, who runs a really cool website called Kindlepreneur. And he sent me some from like the other side of the world. And then I had a big thing of Starbucks from Sam's Club, which is kind of like the mid tier. And then I had I had coffee from Aldi. And I swear to God, like blind taste test, Aldi coffee's not bad. It's really not. You think it's like Aldi, like you got to put a quarter in the cart. I don't know if people even know what I'm talking about, but like whatever, tangent. Yeah. Aldi coffee is not that bad, but I slum it a little bit with my coffee. I like quantity a lot more than quality. Like some people are like, just give me 1 good cup of coffee. I'm like, no, I want like 20 really crappy cups of coffee, like diner, terrible coffee. It's awesome.
All right. Yeah. We're just going to agree to disagree. And, but that's your experience. I respect it. I respect your journey. Yeah.
Something a little more meaningful for people though, like in the morning is, I meditate almost every single morning and I'm horrible at it, but that's kind of the point is that like the more you screw up with meditation, the more your brain wanders and you pay attention to things that you shouldn't be, the better you get over time. That's the learning is in coming back to focus. So
I agree. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Cool. So what is one thing that you read or hear about entrepreneurship all the time that you think is total BS?
I think that this idea of balance, like work-life balance, is a horrible analogy. I used to kind of like really try and rationalize this. It's something I've been like a thesis I've been kind of thinking about a lot lately. This idea that like I used to picture it as kind of like a seesaw. And as long as like one side or the other side, like it was constant motion of like up, down. So it was never like an even balance. But as long as like you kept one side from just like flipping off, it would be fine. And I guess more way I see it now is this kind of like idea of like this guy like named Dave Tate. He's like a strength coach and he owns a really cool company called Elite FTS. He talks about blast and dust and how like when one he's blasting in one area of his life, the other area is dust. And I think that's a little bit more true. Like I think a lot of entrepreneurs want to write about work-life balance, but it's really not a balance. It's more of juggling, right? Like I'm watching the next ball, that I'm going to catch, and then I catch it, put it back up in the air, and then I'm watching the next one. And the better you get at juggling, the more you can kind of do that automatically, and it seems like you have a little bit of flow or like a perceived balance. But really, at the beginning, it's just watching that next project, that next thing you're focusing on, that next time with your family, and not thinking about anything else until that one's up in the air again.
Mm. Cool. Yeah, I've noticed that people are moving away from that work-life balance phrase. So, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Since we're both in Chicago, but we'll just say you're in Chicago. You're close enough.
Can I get like adopted just for the night? I get the same shit weather. Like, come on.
I don't know. I'll have to tweak this question. But so what is your favorite food or beverage that you can only get in the Chicagoland area? How's that?
Oh no. I'm trying to think of like someplace cool. I don't know. I've been living up here ever like probably for like the last 10 years, and I really have to say like that it's so not cool and kind of touristy, but I really love deep dish pizza. I really wish it didn't take an hour to make because I'm a beast and want it now. But I love like just Chicago style deep dish pizza is probably one of my favorite things in the whole world.
Okay, cool. That works. And lastly, what is one simple quote, question, or mantra, whatever, that keeps you going when the going gets tough?
So I love this Tony Robbins quote where he says, if you can't, you must. And if you must, you can. And I think like the end of it is kind of hokey. It's like, oh, Tony, that's witty. It's circular. I get it. Like all blah, blah, blah. But like I've always felt myself kind of coming back to this idea of like whenever I feel like I can't do something, it's like, well, crap. Now I have to go do that. Yeah. I don't know if I can launch my course. You know, this is kind of overwhelming and I don't know. And all these excuses. And it's like, well, as soon as I feel that, it's like, now I have to go do that.
It's like, damn it.
So it's exactly how I feel. Yeah. It's just like, it's so frustrating whenever I feel that doubt. It's just like an immediate trigger in my brain. It's like, I can't. Oh, now I said it. Now I have to do it. So I think it'll resonate with a lot of people. And it's definitely like, if you can't, you must is really, really meaningful to me.
Very cool. Okay. So you've got a full-time job. You told us a bit about that. Have you always had a side business along with working full-time as a teacher and your short stint as a principal, or relatively new?
the moonlighting I did. So probably for like the last 5 years. So it's probably been about 50-50 at this point. I had 5 years with nothing. I was just training and competing a lot in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and really just love the athletic side of it, which I still do. But falling in love with business and the art of business and all of these things for the last 5 years, I've kind of been building this on the side. And what's cool is that I'm such an advocate of building things on the side and side projects that like I don't feel the need to leave my job. I know it's like romantic and everybody's like, you know, you're not a real entrepreneur if you still have a job. And it's like, well, who, like, I'm not going to live up to their definitions and I'm not going to live up to that kind of like, I have to burn the boats and, you know, all of these things. I have a son. I have another baby due in January. It makes my family feel better that I have a 9-to-5. And the amount of money I make with my side business is quite a bit and quite comparable to what I make at my job. But it's just how I've chosen to live my life. So can we add that to the thing earlier of like the thing I think is BS that like you have to quit your job? Like, let's all celebrate the day we quit our jobs. Yeah. Like, not all of us hate our jobs. Like, yeah, my job is a good fit in the school I work at. And I was a really good fit for my personality and the way that I'm wired. And I have a great supervisor and all of these things have kind of aligned. Like, you don't have to quit your job. Like, you can be happy just building something really rad on the side.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that. I mean, like you. So when I read your story, there was a lot that I resonated with. Like you, I had a great job and I enjoyed my coworkers. I loved what I was doing and it was related to online courses. So clearly I still enjoy that. And so I love that you said it doesn't have to be one way. There's this myth that you have to quit your job, go all in, you know, starve, take VC funding, you know, that whole unicorn myth.
I just read something today. I think it was Jason Fried wrote it that like, because somebody gave him a dollar for like like 0.00, like 10 zeros, 1% of his company. His company is now like the valuation is $1 billion or something. Like the whole VC funding unicorn, just foolishness of like this kind of how many, well, we're on our second round of funding and all of these things. And it's like, I'd rather just build a real, they can call it a lifestyle business if they want, but like, I'm not trying to be Uber. And I do want a lifestyle business. I think when we really, if we all sat down and did kind of like a values inventory, like that's what most of us would want too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah.
Definitely.
So when did you decide to start your online side business? Like what year are we talking?
So right about 2011, probably. I think that was when I bought like the first domain. That's when it started getting serious, when I'm like, I'm going to make money off this. And I started giving my wife the Kool-Aid and I was like, we're going to do this and this is going to be a thing and it's going to take time and all of the stuff that goes along with that. So yeah, probably for about the last 4 years or so.
Okay. And did you just start it just because you, what prompted you to start your online kimono business? Like what really was the need?
So one of the things I kind of identified is that I had this hypothesis, which hasn't really panned out, but right, like we're in business, we're just kind of doing experiments. So if things don't pan out, that's fine. Yeah. Not every scientist needs to prove their hypothesis right. That's not the goal. But I had this hypothesis that jujitsu, and I still think it will, I just think it's going to take a lot longer, is going to become like taekwondo and karate, where it's primarily a youth sport. And I wanted to start a Brazilian jiu-jitsu company that focused on kids. And my thought and my feeling, and still is my feeling, that like if I'm the number one kids retailer, eventually, given a long enough time frame, this will become a primarily kids sport and I will be the biggest retailer. Because like just adults won't be buying as many, but more kids will be. Yeah. What I realized along the way is that the majority of parents do not buy their kids' gis based on like online or anything like that. They just buy whatever. They're not even online themselves. They would never think to buy online. They just buy whatever's at their gym. So whatever retailer the gym or like wholesale, you know, their gym has a wholesale deal with the company, they just buy whatever is there. They don't care. Mm-hmm. They don't research it. They don't look. And that meant that I had to kind of go outside my comfort zone and start edging in on other companies, like wholesale agreements with different gyms and all of these different things. And it really wasn't what I was comfortable with. So I just started making adult gis that were based on my kids' gis. So my kids' gis had a big crazy tiger doing like the OK symbol with his, because it's called OK Kimonos, mm-hmm. doing the OK symbol and the shaka. And I just put that all the kids' designs on adult gis, and they sold really well.
So basically, the takeaway is we all want to be kids at heart.
Oh yeah, it's the best. It's the best. Most of, like another one of my big sellers are these things that we call spats. They're pretty much like tights, and they're just made to specifications that they can hold up with a lot more abuse. Right, like you couldn't wear like yoga tights; they'd probably get torn and ripped after a while. But like mine have giant paw prints on the butt. And I have like grown men, like 6'5", 375 pound linebacker maniacs wearing like giant orange paw prints on their butt. And they love it. And so do I. Like, it's just this kind of kitschy, you know, you don't have to have skulls and Native American feathers and vampire bats like on all of your stuff. Like, you can be silly and then go choke a fool.
Yeah.
So that's my thesis.
Got you. Thesis statement. Be silly and go choke a fool.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
So you asked me, I'm like way all, sorry, I'm like real all over the place. So I guess my point is like, I started this because I loved this martial art and it was a relief in a way. I could make money off of something I was already passionate about. I just did my homework, identified what I perceived to be a need, and then I just took massive action over and over and over again.
Yeah. No, it's cool. For those who are listening, we're recording this late in the evening, so we're just going to get loose, you know? Like,
I don't drink, so coffee is as weird as I get.
And I've got water, so this is just us in the raw and loose. So
nice.
Okay, so when did Hustle and Heart come into the picture?
So exactly a year ago, I started a podcast. Like December of 2014, I started the Entrepreneurs and Coffee podcast. And I still have it and I still love it. It's a blast. It gives me a chance to talk to other entrepreneurs and share things that I learned in my business in a way that I'm much more comfortable sharing than like on video or even writing at that point. I've really fallen in love with writing thanks to Medium, but I was just more comfortable saying things into a microphone, kind of like exactly like how we are now. And I shared and I shared and I shared. And I noticed that what people resonated with the most were the times that I talked about my family and being a dad. And I was building this audience and I built an email list of like 1,000 people. And that was great. And I felt like I was doing really well. And I just kept coming back to this idea of like, is this really what I want to say? And are these the people I want to serve? And there's nothing wrong with those people in that email list. I love them. But I really wanted to talk more about how the heck I'm keeping this all together. Like, how do you, where is the number one question I got? Like, how do you have like 3 websites, all those different social media profiles, all those mailing lists, you're monetized all of them. How do you do a podcast and like all of this stuff and still like be a good dad or be a good husband? And I would just answer kind of one off. And I thought like, this is what I'm really passionate about. This is who I want to serve. And even if it's kind of like one step back, I think in the end, it'll be 2 steps forward. So I decided to start Hustling Heart. And I just said, screw it with the domain name. I went with hustleheart.co because everything else was taken and it didn't matter. And I didn't want to just use Brendan Hufford because I wanted to be bigger than me. But I just decided that I was going to start putting the message out into the world that I wanted to versus, you know, one that I thought I had to based on the audience that I had built.
Cool. And when did you and why did you decide to create a course? Was that always a plan or was it a request from your audience?
So I created a course actually prior to that. I really like testing things and I decided to test something. Can I help you, sir? My dog. So I have a really like random, my dog is this like Boston Terrier pug mix and he's kind of crazy and he just decided, thanks. I'm glad we put a collar on you today. We can edit this or not. Anyways, so I had done a course prior. I ran a course called Sidepreneur University. Worst name ever for a course. Like nobody can spell it and it's so long and horrible. But again, like minimum viable product. I don't care about the name. I don't care about the domain. Like I just make and do and go. And I hope that's a lesson people can take from this with courses. Like I just make them and go. And if they sell, they sell. And if they don't, they don't. But I tend to have the idea and like a minimum viable product first before I make anything. And the way I launched the course was just, I ran a couple Facebook ads. I primarily just launched it to my podcast audience at the time. That was all I had. I wasn't really writing anywhere. And I just said, hey, I have this course and it's pretty much 8 weeks long. Here's how from beginning to end, how you start a side business. From like, I don't know what my strengths are. I know I want to start a business, have no idea, to like the final step of I have a product, I have a business, and I'm launching it. And people signed up. And I said, all right, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to deliver it live every Thursday night at 8 for 8 weeks. And you're going to pay me the money. And I built a landing page and lead pages. And people signed up and they paid me. And I delivered the course live and made the workbooks, you know, every single week and built it based on feedback. And then I eventually decided, like, again, that's not the course I want to make. It's not the audience I want to serve. I started coaching clients around that time and I coached a couple clients that I were not the audience again that I wanted to serve. Yeah. And another reason, like, I really drilled down with Hustle and Heart and decided to start making courses primarily aimed at entrepreneur dads was because I just felt like I resonated with them and I know they resonated with me when I talked to people who bought my stuff. Like, why did you choose me? That was like a big reason all the time. So Sidepreneur University, the parts are still out there. Everybody who bought it still has access to it and they're a great group of people. But again, like it was kind of this fragmented all over the place group. And I really wanted to focus a little bit more. Just because I focus now doesn't mean it'll limit me later.
Yeah, I love the way that you approach things. And I think it's going to be super valuable for those listening because it's something that I read years ago, Steve Pavlina. He has his ready, fire, aim approach and just like taking action and figuring out the details and figuring out, you know, if it was the right move or not. But either way, you're going to learn something, and you can always change things and iterate and redo it or not do it later. So I think that that is a lesson worth learning for a lot of us. Okay. So Cypreneur University, you went through it. You decided that wasn't those weren't the people you wanted to serve. And you were deep into Hustle and Heart. You wanted to focus on dads. Where did the idea for productivity fundamentals come into play, your recent course?
Surveys, all surveys. I have another survey out right now that I just sent out. I have a really cool Facebook group that I run of all entrepreneur dads, and I have a mailing list that goes with the site. Send it out to the mailing list, send it, you know, really pushing it hard in the Facebook group and anywhere else that I can. And the first survey I sent out, I said, what's your number one struggle? And literally every single one came back and just said, I don't have time. Yeah. I want this. I need this. I feel like I'm drowning because I can't like not know what I know now that it's possible, but I just don't feel like I have the time to do it. And I thought, cool, well, I can tell them how to get the time, and then I can tell them how to take that tiny bit of time and multiply it by making themselves more effective. Like, I can teach that. I've done that. So I did. I made a course for it and launched it. And, I didn't launch it like hard with, here's a 3-video series and like all the things, you know. I didn't do all of that. I didn't go promote it anywhere. I didn't run any Facebook ads. I just want to see, does my core audience, they said they wanted it, will they pay for it? And they did. Yeah. They did. They paid for it. And I thought, great, I'll make it. So then I made it. And it was pretty cool. I launched it with like 3 phases of like a VIP pricing, a pre-sale pricing, and now it's on regular pricing. And yeah, what's cool is if I got enough VIPs, I started to make it. I further validated it with pre-sale pricing. And then I finished the course in between that VIP launch and the actual like regular pricing. And everybody was on the up and up with it. So it worked out really, really well.
Okay, so I want to come back to some points there, but first, how long has it been since you launched the course?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Like, are we talking months, weeks?
No, like maybe a month or so.
Gotcha. So, and this is a first for the Zen Courses Show, because most of the people I've interviewed have had their course out for like a year or several months. So I really wanted to chat with you because your course is pretty recent at the time of recording this interview. So you said you started with VIP pricing and then you went into pre-sale pricing. Let's dig into that a little bit. So VIP, I assume, did that go to your list?
Yeah, that went to the guys in my Facebook group and then just to the list. But it was just like one email of like, here it is, check it out, and then we're going to roll.
Yep.
And then when I did the pre-sale, I really started doing a lot of content around it as well. I'm really big on content marketing, and probably to my own detriment, because I'm putting out all my information for free pretty much. You know, I really try to save like the best, like some really cool things, really special things for the course. But I still want to put most of it out there. Like, my goal is to help my audience. I want my free information to be better than what other people are charging for.
Yeah. So with the pre-sale, did you open it up to people outside of your list and your Facebook group?
Yeah, that's when I just started sharing it kind of all over the place. I started sharing it on my podcast. I started sharing it with kind of all that other audience that I had built. I sent it out to the Entrepreneurs and Coffee email list and things like that. I think I even sent it out to my jujitsu email list. Like, I have two email lists, one for my gi review website and then one for OK Kimonos. And I think I even sent it out to them once.
Interesting. Very interesting. Cool. So Let's take a step back and talk about your course specifically. Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of the course? Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, the purpose of the course is just to help dads get over that hurdle of getting started. I think getting started is the hardest thing. And the webinar that I did to support Sidepreneur University was called The Art of the Start. And a lot of it is just like the mindset that's necessary, setting up routines and habits, and then really just drilling down on how to get more time and how to use that time effectively. I felt like the best way to get dads to get started was not to give them more strategy and more tactics and things like that. We had to focus on the core kind of value of time.
Yeah, So looking at, because you created Cypreneur University before this, what were your biggest challenges in general with those two courses when you were starting out as far as creating them?
So Cypreneur University, the biggest challenge for me was that I was delivering it live. It was really convenient for me that I could test that all first and I could iterate as we went. But delivering it live and being held to like every Thursday night with a wife and a kid and a job and all the things is hard. That like every Thursday night I need the house quiet and I'm going to be working for an hour, hour and a half, because I answered, I did Q&A at the end too. So that was definitely a struggle. What was more of a struggle for this one, the productivity course, like I identified the need and I originally was going to launch it as an ebook. And I talked to my mastermind group, which they're lifesavers. And my mastermind group was like, look, the only reason you launch an ebook is to get more leads or to make a bunch of money. And would you, you know, what is the goal of yours? And I'm like, I don't know. I thought it would be fun. It would help people. And they're like, are you running, like, you have another successful business. Would you make jujitsu gis just to help people? And I was like, absolutely not. They're like, so don't, you're not, I mean, helping people is a goal, but like, you want, like, it has to be a business.
Yeah.
So I decided, all right, well, I've made one course, let's build it out. And I built it out on a kind of course platform called Teachery.
Yep.
And which is co-founded by a guy named Jason Zook, who is awesome. And I love him. He was on my podcast. So I'm really happy to build it on there. And it was kind of giving me an excuse to play on there as well. But yeah. I guess one of the biggest challenges with that is just I was building it without any feedback this time. It was kind of the opposite. Like I could do it in, I could build it at 3 a.m. if I wanted to, which I did, but I didn't have like a ton of feedback going through every single time like I did when I did it live.
And this one is self-paced, right? Productivity Fundamentals is self-paced.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
So you
is there a live component at all?
No, the first kind of 10 people who bought got a call with me, like a laser coaching call. But other than that, there's no live component.
Okay. So walk us through the structure. Like what would an inside peek into Productivity Fundamentals look like?
So if you went into it right now, it would, hold on, I'll log in. We can walk through it. It's really cool. The way it's laid out is just kind of, there's a left sidebar with all of the lessons, kind of like a quick jump to all the lessons. There's an introduction, kind of a lesson on establishing like the problem with productivity. I thought it was really important before I just started telling people like, this is how we're going to fix this. We had to establish it as an issue. Not that we don't have time. A, we do have time, and B, we use our time really crappy. And I just had to name it, right? We're going to be friends. You bought my course. Like I have to name the issue. In lesson 3, we talk about finding more time. We do an audit. We have a couple cool exercises that help us find more time in our day when we didn't think we had time. The next lesson talks about really being like a lot of what you think about core tenets of productivity, kind of frameworks and structures for using that time better. Then there's a couple I didn't have a spot for, like, I really wanted to include these somewhere with a little more structure. This is kind of like the teacher in me of like finding teachable moments and just wanting them in there. I have like lesson 5 is literally just a list of like productivity hacks. Lesson 6 runs through my personal, like the things I actually do on a day-to-day basis, because it's great to arm somebody with 100 techniques. The same is true in jiu-jitsu or anything, right? I can give you 100 techniques. I could give a basketball player 100 different moves, but the best basketball players are the ones who have like one move that nobody can stop. You know, the same is true in jiu-jitsu. The same is true with productivity. Like if you have a couple, like 2 or 3 solid things, like you're going to, that 20% is going to give you 80% of your results. So lesson 6 was like, here is what actually works and what I personally do, like over the shoulder look. Then I wanted, you know, once we did all of that teaching, I really want to implement it. So I have a 7-day productivity challenge where we start implementing all of those things. And there's kind of 7 sub lessons under that. And then I have a couple bonus lessons as well.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is there are 6 core lessons, and then you have the productivity challenges that happen after they've gone through the 6 lessons, or
So I think people would get their money's worth if they just ran the productivity challenge. They could even do that first if they want to, because it's just, it's all open. I thought about dripping it out over time, but decided not to. I feel like it has its pros and cons, but I know that if I jumped into something and somebody was like, you can't, you know, you're not, I don't even know how to, I was trying to think of some sort of analogy with like an old martial arts master, like telling me I'm not ready to learn that and my cup is full. I don't know, whatever. Something.
Yeah.
It made sense. But I just felt like I want it all. Like, I want to go in there and click on 20 things and not learn anything for the first week and then be like, all right, let me actually go through this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a big fan of just having things open, you know, locking content down and forcing people to interact, because, you know, one lesson might not be especially helpful or relevant. I don't want to say helpful, but it may not be relevant, or maybe I've mastered that outside in my own life already. So let me go on to the next thing. So I think that's a great way to do it. Cool. So what has been the feedback on the course?
You know what? I think with most courses, this is so ready. It's a course on productivity about finding time and getting time. And you know what my number one piece of feedback is, Janelle?
What is it?
I haven't had time yet. I'm like, really? This couldn't be more meta. Like, what do you mean you haven't had time to get into the stuff? So, you know, yeah. I'm really big on this. Here's what's cool is that, like, I run all these other businesses and they make a lot of money in this, honestly, like Hustle and Heart. The Productivity Fundamentals of Sidepreneur University make crap money compared to everything else. But I couldn't be happier starting something again from scratch. Like, having that small feeling of like, hey, you bought my course. This is actually me emailing you, not an autoresponder. Like, hey, how's it going? What questions? Like, just sending out those emails. I love that.
Yeah. Self-paced courses, and this is kind of getting into my world of doing consulting on courses. Self-paced courses are notorious for just people not finishing them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of having to figure out, especially if you have a group that is already challenged in that area of finishing and time management, like that's the big challenge as a course designer, figuring out how to push them to finish, just do the work. Just do the work, how to get them to do it. So any surprises? Other than people just not getting the work done, was there anything that you learned in getting this course out there in the past month, since it's relatively new, like any surprises?
I don't really feel like I was surprised by anything. One of the things that really helped me out a lot was getting my mastermind group to look at the course, and we do an exercise in my mastermind group that I can't take credit for. One of the other people thought of it, but it was just this idea of like talking about somebody like they're not here.
Yeah.
And it's not ragging on them, but it's like, all right, let's actually have it out. Like, what is up with Brendan's course? And they ran through, and in a very productive and humbling way, just like kind of tore it apart. They were like, this, that, and the other thing, and this one doesn't even have a workbook, and I don't know what they would need a workbook for in this lesson, but like I didn't like that there wasn't one, and all of these other, like, they really tore it apart. And there's a lot of work that I had to do and a lot of work I still have to do in it. It is a, if you want to do it and do it well, your course is really, and even if you have more than one course, which I plan to launch like 10 or 15 of them. I don't know. It'll be a big, awesome thing at some point. But like, I think like it's your calling card, and you really do need to treat it like you don't have to sit and wait for it to be finished and perfect to launch it, but you need to constantly be iterating and progressing with it. And that was something I wasn't ready for. Because when I launched the last one, like once I taught a lesson, like it had been taught, it was done. I didn't have to go back and fix it. So with this one, like I'm constantly updating, changing, you know, I didn't like the branding on one of the workbook pages. So I'm changing that. I'm making them all a lot more cohesive and kind of thinking like, how can I continue? These people have already given me their money. I could say it's on them to do the course. And if they don't want to, that's fine. But I think my best advice to any course maker up, you know, out there is you are only as good as the results you get for people. And that social proof down the road means so incredibly much. If I could say, you know, if I had a testimonial that said I bought Brendan's course and now I'm a millionaire and it was real, like that would probably sell a lot more courses. So, but if all my testimonials are like, yeah, I did half of it, like that doesn't help anybody. So I'm constantly thinking of more ways to incentivize people going through the courses, whether that's, or going through the lessons, whether that's changing the order, whether that's changing a million different things. That was something that has been not necessarily a surprise, but something I'm really working on.
Yeah, courses are a lot of work. And I think that a lot of people underestimate the amount of work that's involved and even just, like you said, iterating and changing. So with that being said, is there anything that you would have done differently, like with the knowledge that you have now, if you were starting over?
I think that I would have done a better job showing people behind the curtain before I launched it. I would have built it out a little more. And I would have shown people what they're going to get before I started selling it. I think being able to show people inside the course, my buddy Paul Jarvis, who runs a creative class, he is the best and awesome, just like Jason. And he has a really cool video. And I'm not saying you need like a professional video to sell your course, but it's very much Paul and it's very much what you're going to get out of the creative class. And I think having, even if it was just a helpful video at the top of my sales page that was like, hey, I'm Brendan, let's take a look at this course. And then it just cut to like a screen capture of me clicking around and things like that would have been super helpful for people to actually see what they're getting.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's switch gears a little bit, because you are an entrepreneur and a family man. You wrote an article that I thought was absolutely brilliant. And it was called It's Not Because You're a Father. And in that article, you say, quote, we've been set up to use our fatherhood and providing for our family as a crutch. What do you mean by that?
Well, first, I have to give credit to Eileen Stanley Conway wrote an article called It's Not Because You're a Mother.
Yeah.
And I read it and I was like, dads need this. And I could share it with them, but I didn't think it would be the same. So I pretty much did. I pulled an Austin Kleon. Do you know who Austin Kleon is?
I don't.
He wrote two really amazing books. One is called Steal Like an Artist and the other is called Show Your Work. And Steal Like an Artist is just this idea that like true artists steal. And he uses this thing called the elevator test, where like if I stole from you, Janelle, and you knew that I stole your stuff, but it was so good and we got in an elevator together, would you give me a high five or a punch in the face? Like, and I want the high five, clearly. So I really wanted to improve it. I wanted to make it better. And just, I wanted her to read it. And she did. She read it and she's like, that's fantastic. She said I could pay her in candy corn. So if you're going to steal, you're totally allowed to steal from people. You just have to make it different and better. So that was like 2 minutes of me giving her credit. But so in here, I said that like we use our fatherhood as a crutch. And the thing is with fatherhood, being a husband and a father or just a father, whatever, you know, all of a sudden this tiny, amazing being is in your world and you are wholly responsible for their success in life. And I feel like a lot of dads with a lot of remorse just abandon their dreams, but then they try and tell their sons and daughters like, you can live your dreams, you can do anything, and they're like, dad, but you're not. And I just didn't want to use being a dad as a crutch to like not succeed, you know what I mean? I think that like if you're a working dad like me, if I go to my 9-to-5, and I just feel like a lot of dads are like, well, that's good enough. Like I go to my night, I take care of my family and I provide. And it's like, that is great. That is that you're doing exactly what you're supposed to do. But I also think that like you should have dreams and you should want to do more. And what you do is going to say so much more to your kids than just going to the 9-to-5.
Yeah.
So true. And I also think too, that it's really easy to get caught up as a dad with, you know, looking at freaking Instagram or everything at, like, you know, I read about tech CEOs and all of these amazing lives and all of these things. It's really easy to get caught up in that stuff. And it's really easy to think, well, I can't do that because I have a family. They don't have a family. They don't have a family. And it's like, you're just, it's confirmation bias. Like, you already believe it, so you find stories that back that up. But, you know, the owners of Buffer might not have kids, but there's a ton of dudes out there with multi-million dollar companies and, you know, whatever, just like companies worth six figures that like really are awesome dads and awesome husbands. And like, you're just not looking for those kinds of stories.
Yeah. I think that goes back to what you said, something you said earlier, which is also something that's close to my heart. And it's just creating your own version, your own path in this entrepreneurial journey and being grateful for your life, like love your life, you know, as it is or as you want it to be, and stop comparing yourself to other people because that's not your path. It's not you. Okay, cool. So
we went way off the rails.
We're way off. We're getting all philosophical and everything, but it's cool. We are down to the final three questions. First one, what's next for you? Anything exciting coming up?
Yeah. I now that I think I've addressed a core issue for, you know, in obviously I talk mostly to entrepreneur dads, but anybody who's extremely busy as an entrepreneur, like whatever being a dad, like you're passionate about your family. I think it applies to moms. I think it applies to a lot of people. But like, now that I've addressed kind of a core issue of that group, which is the time thing, I want to keep building on that. But now I want to start sharing the things that I've actually done to build my business. Like, how have I used webinars? How have I used email marketing? How have I used content marketing? Like, I want to make courses and I want to make products for people based on those things.
Cool. Second question, where can people find out more about you, Brendan?
The best place to find out about me is at hustleheart.co. There's an about page there. It's a funny little story all about me. And the it's so silly. And then I can't take myself that seriously. And then I also have a podcast. If people just go to eandcoffee.com, that'll open up directly in iTunes and they can check out the Entrepreneurs and Coffee podcast.
Okay. Very nice. Last question, what's your why? Why do you get up and do this work every day?
So I think I have two. I think number one is my faith as a Christian, the constant pursuing of wanting to be better because we're going to get real off the rails, but like, because I feel that I've been saved, I then want to repay that. I don't feel like I have to be a good person. I don't feel like I have to do good in the world to be saved. But I do feel that because I have been unconditionally, I want to repay that by putting as much good out into the world as possible. And then I think kind of as a second thing, it really is my wife and my son. Yeah. I grew up without my dad, like really in my life. My parents got divorced when I was one, so I kind of saw him every other weekend. I never knew what it was like to have a dad in the house. Now that my son is 2.5, he has more of an experience with his dad in the house than I did. So that is a tremendous, to the point that like I couldn't create content, I couldn't make things without including him or my wife in them anymore. That like that was my brand pivot, right? I think he and my wife are very clearly my why.
Beautiful. Well, Brendan, it has been great to chat with you. Thanks for being on the Zen Courses show.
Thanks so much, Janelle. Thanks. Thanks also to all of your listeners who have listened this far with me going off the rails and rambling and stuff. I'm sincerely appreciative, and I really sincerely hope they've gotten some great nuggets of wisdom about building their own courses.
Yeah, I do too, and I think they will. Cool. Look, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Brendan from HustleHeart.co. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to Brendan's course and other cool stuff he shared just for you. To check out those show notes, just head over to zencourses.co/013 and you'll find all of the links and highlights. Again, that's zencourses.co/013. Last but certainly not least, if you haven't picked up your free online course plan template, what are you waiting for? 2016 is right around the corner, and I know you've got big plans for your course. To help you get started, I have put together a free one-page online course plan template just for you. In one simple page, you will be able to answer some critical planning questions. When you finish, you'll have a simple course plan and be on your way to building your course. So how do you get this template? Well, it couldn't be easier. Head over to zencourses.co and click Get Your Free Course Planner. That's it, zencourses.co. All right, I am Janelle Allen, and this has been the Zen Courses Show. As always, thank you for listening.